Okay, great. Welcome, everybody, to the Addiction 911 show. My name is Christina Rowe, and I am your host today. And today we're going to be talking about deadly synthetic drugs on the rise and what you must know. So I want to introduce everybody here today. And right now we have up on the screen Mark Astor, who's a drug and alcohol attorney. We have Harvey Brown, who's the founder of Insight to Recovery. We have Ruth Churchill, who's the outreach coordinator for Just Believe Recovery Center. We also have Cliff Churchill, who's, what is your exact title, Cliff?
I'm the lead clinical director for the
lead clinical director. Perfect. Okay, wonderful. And we have Dr. Tom here, who is an addiction professional. Dr. Tom, what do you do in the addiction field?
I do the chiropractic and auricular therapy portion to help provide therapy and support for the addicts that have pain. And the auricular therapy also helps with the craving for the product.
Got it. Okay. Great. Thank you for explaining that. Okay, perfect. Because I know that auricular,
you're welcome.
I would have messed up on that. Okay, wonderful.
And I'm a chiropractic physician, if you didn't say that.
Great. Wonderful. Right. So, okay, wonderful. Thank you. And welcome, everybody. Welcome to our panelists here today. And I'm excited for you guys to be here. This is a very serious issue that we're facing. And the goal of the Addiction 911 show is to educate the public and to help them understand what's going on right now that they need to know to protect their loved ones, their families, and themselves in the addiction community. And you guys are the experts, and you're here to help them with that. And this synthetic drugs that are coming out right now. I want to ask you guys, and I'll we'll have everybody, you know, whoever wants to answer first, but who can explain to what exactly is a synthetic opiate drug? Who would be best to explain that to us? So people who have no idea what a synthetic drug is versus a regular street drug, like what exactly is that?
I could answer, and I'm sure others could fill in better, but basically they take street drugs, which are derivatives of poppy, opium, and they have all the different parts of the narcotic or opioid molecules. And chemists and physicists, more chemists than physicists, in China and other countries will duplicate synthetically. And that does a couple of things. It allows them to create the same effect on the mind and body. And it skirts around rules that say they're illegal. So it duplicates certain molecules, actually, of the various opioids in, say, an opium product that has everything. And each opium, you know, the overall product gets broken down into the various drugs that we use. Heroin is diamorphine, I believe, and that's actually still used in England. And they then manufacture these synthetically and skip the entire actual harvesting process in a very large bulk.
And is this done because this is going to be a cheaper way to get the drugs onto the market with the drug dealers? They make more profit. Is it just a new way that they're getting a higher high for people? Is that the goal behind these synthetic drugs?
Yeah, I can answer that. fentanyl is the main synthetic drug that we're concerned about today. It's hundreds of times more potent than heroin. And they just use a small amount to cut the heroin, so they're able to process or use make 10, 15, 20 times the amount of heroin to sell. I'm not sure the exact number, and it's very, very dangerous. There is one or two states in the country that I think somewhere out west, somewhere, that is using pure heroin that they cut still, which is would be wonderful. But this fentanyl is so strong that if it's a little bit too much in a bag or a dose of heroin, it causes the body to overdose, because it's like doing 10, 20 shots of heroin at one time. So that's the most dangerous synthetic, or the synthetic drugs, like the bath salts and that, but we're not really concerned about those right now. We're concerned about the fentanyl, which is killing hundreds of people a day throughout the country.
And it comes in whether it's come in pill form, it can come in whatever way they're doing the heroin, shooting it up, or whatever way this fentanyl can be added to that.
It comes in the heroin itself. You buy the heroin and it's laced with fentanyl, and you don't know how much is in there. And the interesting thing about the addiction is I've had clients and know hundreds of addicts that have come out of detox from an overdose of heroin, which was laced with fentanyl. And the day or two they come out of detox, they go shoot up again. And I said, well, why would you do that if you know that that heroin could still have fentanyl and you'd overdose again? They don't care. That's total insanity. And I don't care. I'm recovering alcoholic addict myself, but I can't relate to that kind of addiction. But so there's hundreds a day are we all from Florida? Where are you guys from?
I'm originally from New Jersey, but we're all here in Florida. Yeah, okay. Everybody here is in Florida.
Yeah,
well, I'm in Florida.
Florida
now.
And Jersey, New York, is all the states now are having major problems with the overdoses and the deaths caused by this, by the heroin epidemic, which is laced with fentanyl.
Yes, and I think what's really scary, I don't know if anybody has heard, there was a police officer who, I believe it was Ohio, who went to help an addict who had overdosed, and there was white powder. He had even had gloves on, so I don't know how it happened, but in the car to help the addict, and he got some on his skin, and he overdosed and almost died, but they saved him just because he accidentally touched this thing. So it's absorbed through the skin too, from what I understand. So this makes it really scary for people to be really careful. Another incident I was talking with Ruth about was there was a boy who died because he was at a party and he took two hits off a vape pen, thinking he was smoking marijuana, you know, vaping, and it was synthetic marijuana, and he died from that. Mm-hmm. So I think parents have to, like, there's a new education, I think, that has to be through the children and for, you know, people to understand that even something innocently like, okay, I'm going to go, or not so innocently, but, you know, your kids are going to think it's nothing that could kill them, can actually kill them because of this synthetic component that's coming through.
Right.
So have you in the difference, I'll put this to the Just Believe Recovery, if either Cliff or Ruth want to answer. Have you seen a rise at your treatment center of these type of fentanyl and synthetic overdoses?
Actually, we haven't seen a high amount of those in particular. I spoke with our detox this morning to confirm that. Last year, we saw a huge increase in the W18 synthetic opioid. But even that has kind of pretty drastically decreased this year. So it seemed to be a fad last year a little bit more, according to our detox. Yeah. So they're not seeing near as much of it in our particular area here in Jensen Beach.
Okay. Well, that's good to know that. I know last year we had the big issue with Flocka, which was also a synthetic drug that was coming from, I believe, China. And
right.
And what about you, Dr. Tom? Have you seen any, have you had any clients that you've been dealing with who've come across this synthetic drug with an addiction to that?
I have a lot of addiction patients at the moment, but the statistics say that in 2012, 11% of the high school seniors used synthetic marijuana in the past year. And 11,406 ER visits in 2010 were associated with synthetic marijuana. And 75% of them were among adolescents and young adults from 12 to 29. And 22.5% of them are females, and 77.5% were males. But fortunately, the Monitoring the Future came out saying that the numbers have gone down since that. And for the seniors, it's down 12.6, but that's including all illicit drugs other than marijuana combined, which is declined to the lowest level in history. So that's a good sign if we're starting to level out in that way. But I have a feeling that when one levels out, the other one pops up.
Exactly, and that's unfortunate. I have a question first, since Mark is an attorney, drug and alcohol attorney. Does this make this any different if someone unknowingly
thinks they're doing one drug and then they're given another as far as criminally? I mean, is with the synthetic drugs, if somebody takes a pill and they think, like, for example, it's rumored that Prince thought he was taking Percocet and it was really fentanyl that killed him. I don't know if that's exactly true or not. But in that type of case, what legally happens with these things?
So, you know, obviously if somebody is caught with, you know, a drug like heroin or cocaine, they're caught in possession of those things, they're going to get prosecuted. If they're caught in, you know, possession of something like fentanyl or carfentanil, and there's no legal reason having that, then obviously they're going to get prosecuted for that. In my practice, I'm either dealing with patients who are in the criminal justice system because they're dealing with addiction issues, or families come to me because they've got a child, you know, a teenager, a young adult who is either been in a treatment facility and never finishes the treatment or just keeps relapsing. So, you know, I'm not dealing with a lot of people who are, you know, sort of caught in possession of these fentanyls or carfentanyls. I think those are sort of more the street type dealers. I'm dealing with families who are, or individuals who are, you know, basically in crisis because they're addicted and they can't get over the hump. And you know, the family can't get them to stay in a facilities like Ruth's or Cliff's and successfully complete the treatment. And that's typically what I deal with. That's what I speak about and write about.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Harvey, this question would be for you. From what I understand, I think we have a little bit. Let me see if I can use this feedback stuff. this being that this is on the rise, and what I read is that a lot of these synthetic drugs are being manufactured in China but coming through Mexico. Have you heard anything about that? What the influx is coming from?
I think this comes from Mexico, China. I'm not really sure. I know that 90% of all the heroin today is laced with fentanyl.
Really?
So, yeah. Most of the heroin is laced with fentanyl, and they don't, that's not always cut that strongly, so they don't overdose. But you never know when it's going to be. There's no way to test it and determine if it's laced with heroin or not, with fentanyl. I think the problem is, that is definitely a problem, but, you know, the main problem is, you probably all know that this started with doctors who were prescribing opiates, Percocets, the Oxycontins, mm-hmm. For pain, giving you lots and lots of prescriptions. And a lot of the kids were able to get them from their parents and for themselves. And then they cracked down on this, and all these doctors really should be losing their license to be prescribing these kind of medications like that. It's then not necessary in those quantities. But the problem was that they cracked down and they were more difficult to get the prescriptions for the Oxycontins and the Percocets and the opiate pills. And because of that, they very expensive. They were selling those pills for $20, $30, $40 a pill. And heroin is for $5. You can get a bag to shoot up. So most, and they even snorting it. So most of the addicts started using heroin, and it became a major epidemic. So, and then they got hooked on the heroin. It's much cheaper. Now, the problem today is that the heroin is laced with fentanyl, and people are dying. Addicts are dying all over the place. It's very, very serious epidemic. I've had personal friends of mine die. Clients that have come in here that been back in recovery who relapsed or dead now. We have lots of people coming into our program from detox who overdosed and they came into our program. I think what needs to be emphasized more than anything is the treatment for the heroin addiction. An addict needs a minimum of 3 months in a controlled environment that supports the recovery process in 12 steps So they can, once they leave treatment, they can get into a recovery process with new friends, new lifestyles. I'm just getting over a sore throat or a cold, so my voice is a little scratchy, but for those of you who don't know me, this is not my normal voice. So it's very serious, and there are not enough treatment programs today that are having the outcomes that we'd like to see. 4 to 7%, no matter what the people that run the programs are telling you, is the recovery rate in this industry nationwide. So that's less than 1 out of 10 who come out of treatment are getting into recovery and staying sober and clean.
Only
that
4,
means
that low.
9 out of 100, you still have 90 people out, 90 addicts out there still using. So the area gets saturated with addicts who are still using, back in the Delray Beach area. Becomes a difficult environment. And it's a serious problem. It's happening all over the country today.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and it's very, very scary. I'm going to put this question back to Just Believe Recovery. Ruth, if you want to answer this. So we're seeing what Harvey's saying is we're seeing, you know, very low recovery rates because of this heroin. And I'm sure you're familiar. What are your thoughts on this? Is this the biggest issue you're dealing with right now? Is this heroin is like front and center out of all the addictions?
I would say so. We definitely have the highest amount of people coming through our recovery center dealing with a addiction to heroin.
And this is the biggest problem. And you're also seeing it laced with this fentanyl, and it's making it more difficult to treat. And it's they're coming back, and it's multiple. And so, I mean, I guess we don't know the answer. If we knew the answer, it would be easier to figure out. But nobody really knows the answer of how to stop this, other than educating people not to start. Now, Harvey brought up a really good point about the doctors. We discussed this at our last Florida Addiction Professionals Luncheon about the responsibility of dentists and doctors. And I think, you know, what had happened was once they realized they got people hooked by giving them pain medicine, and then they suddenly cut them off with nowhere to go. And then they went to the streets where they should have maybe referred them to a treatment center to detox first off of those pain pills instead of making them turn to the $5 bag of heroin. You know, so that, what are your thoughts on that, Cliff?
I'm sorry, I just got an email. Catch me up a second. We were talking about the heroin overdose.
Right. We were just saying about your thoughts on the with the doctor's responsibility as far as, should they have, instead of getting scared and saying, I've created these addicts, I've prescribed too many pain pills, and maybe they should have referred them to treatment centers instead of just cutting their prescriptions off suddenly, where so many people just churn. It seems like a doctor, as soon as they see somebody, this person might have a problem, they get scared, no more pills for you, and they cut the person off, and then the person's left addicted. I think it's their responsibility to refer them to treatment or get them help before just cutting them off suddenly from any sort of drug that they put them on to begin with. Would we agree on that?
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a huge problem.
What I've seen. What I've seen is, there's a lack of, I would say, training or acceptance in the general medical profession about how to deal with this. I remember working with a clinical director once who had been prescribed benzodiazepines, which is another very addictive drug that's commonly prescribed. And one day her doctor looked at her and said, "Oh, hey, you're addicted," and cut her off. And she went into withdrawal. She wasn't an addict. She had to go find a psychiatrist to titrate her dose down carefully. And she had thought that, and if she hadn't been a higher functioning person, she might have been another person in this problem. And so there is a sense where the medical industry is adding on to this issue because they're not looking at alternative pain treatments, alternative coping mechanisms. It's Western medicine still very centered on it's a surgery or a pill, as opposed to let's look at massage therapy and chiropractor and yoga and exercise as other ways to alleviate and deal with pain. And that's not my no. We do here, and a lot of treatment centers have really started to look at what are alternative strategies for pain.
That's an excellent point. Mark, what are your thoughts on that, about the different, you know, having with the clients that you see, as far as with the responsibility of doctors and you know, going back to that from a legal standpoint about that?
So, you know, when I deal with clients, typically when it comes to, especially with the Marchman Act, what I'm typically finding is there's a co-occurring mental health issue going on. When you're dealing with somebody who is self-medicating, and what I'm hearing is that insurance will only cover 30 days of treatment, and that's not enough. And the clients tell me 30 days isn't enough, 60 days is just the beginning, and 180 days is where I really need to be. They say after 180 days, they feel significantly better. So, I mean, it's sort of a catch-22, right? I mean, insurance doesn't want to pay for it, so the client doesn't really get better. So they tend to relapse, which is why, you know, the numbers that Harvey talked about, you know, are what they are. And so then the person relapses, then they go back into treatment, and then they ask the insurance company to pay for another 30 days. And so you've got this sort of this wheel, right? You know, the revolving door, as it were, of people in and out of treatment. And the problem is that it's not getting fixed first or second time around. And that's a significant part of the problem. And obviously, when you're dealing with somebody who has a mental health issue, you know, that needs to be addressed. And if you don't sort of address that issue, then, you know, the person's going to keep self-medicating with whatever they can get their hands on. And so, I mean, I think that's a part of the problem. We need longer treatment. You got to give the treatment centers a chance to heal the client. I mean, you know, you can't train for a marathon in 30 days. You can't fix somebody who's been, you know, using opioids for 5, 10, 15 years in 30 days. It's just not possible. And so you have to give the treatment centers a chance to do their job. I mean, you know, I know there's sort of been this, a lot of, you know, press about the treatment centers of this, that, you know, a lot of sort of, you know, talking about the bad actors. And like any profession, of course, there are bad actors. But I think there are a lot of treatment centers out there who really do care about helping the clients get better. And so you've got to give them a chance to do their job. And if you're going to cut them off after 30 days, don't be surprised when the success rates are, you know, what Harvey talked about, 4% and 5%. I mean, the nature of the beast, if you don't give people the chance to do their job.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Thank you for that, because it's definitely true that people are, you know, are having this not long enough treatments. And I want to, I'm going to turn it over to, let's see who hasn't spoken for, let's ask Harvey for a second about this, about your thoughts on longer treatment. I'm finding that if I mute everybody except for the person talking, we'll have less feedback. So let me just mute everybody. And so Harvey, what is your thoughts on that?
Well, definitely longer treatment, but also it's the type of treatment. You know, I think that someone said about, the attorney said about the mental health needs to be addressed also. When it comes to addiction, there's a lot of confusion in the treatment of addicts with that are dual diagnosed or have other disorders. If it's primary alcohol or drugs, that is the main problem, and that needs to be treated first. Once a person gets addicted and becomes an addict to a chemical, the chemical itself creates mental dysfunction, augmentation, delusionary thoughts. It's also a disease of the mind, and our thinking becomes distorted. And not because of childhood issues, but because of living in an illusion, the world with our thoughts while we're under the influence. And the nature of addiction is to use more. Even you get the feeling you like, and then you use more. It's the phenomena of craving. We can't stop once we start using. So long-term treatment is good, but it's the type of treatment that's very important. Now, in our program, we like them to stay at least for 3 months, but we also want them to get connected in the first 2 to 3 weeks in a 12-step recovery continuum, where they can have other alcoholics and addicts that they can relate to and talk to, who have been where they are and now are clean and sober, there's nothing more therapeutic than being emotionally connected with other recovering addicts and alcoholics. It keeps the addict from using. And then working on the 12 steps and learning about their resentments and a lot of the things that they have going on, and their lack of communication skills and their isolation and the relapse factors. Through the steps, they identify this and start sharing. They make amends to their families and heal relationships. This can be done within the first 2 or 3 months. And as you know, when you have a resentment and you make an amend and you heal that relationship, don't you feel better? Don't you feel like, oh, wow, and the relationship starts building up again? And if you're in that kind of recovery process during treatment and after treatment, your chances go up. There's not 4 to 7%, but maybe 50, 60% of staying clean and sober, because you're now at a point where if you do have serious mental issues like childhood abuse, sexual abuse, whatever it can be, then you can have the ability to have a clear head and work on those issues. But working on them in early recovery is not healthy at all, because it keeps you from processing and getting a network. And when I was out there using, I worked on my issues, felt good. I didn't need any more help. And I kept on relapsing, because the issues don't keep me relapsing. What keeps me relapsing is the mental condition caused by the disease of the drugs.
Thank you, Harvey. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, and you bring up a good point. We're talking about the fact of, you know, longer treatment. Definitely, you said 3 months, just like everybody probably here can agree upon. But we also have the issue now, and we just switch topics a little bit here, that, you know, with the changes in the healthcare system that are presented to us coming up with Obamacare maybe on not being available, and they do want to change it so treatment's not going to be available, we have a whole other issue. So I'm going to just ask Ruth. I'm going to unmute Ruth right now. So Ruth, you're unmuted. I'm going to mute myself. But what are your thoughts about the healthcare changes and how this is going to affect long-term treatment for addiction?
Well, I mean, that's kind of hard to say. We're not sure how to predict those types of changes. But one thing we all do agree on is the length of stay needs to be increased. I mean, 3 to 6 months, ideally a year. And I think there's a huge misconception that treatment centers are simply just interested in the money aspect of it and not truly caring about the clients and the patients that we're seeing. A lot of treatment owners are simply scholarshipping a huge amount of clients coming through and addicts. And what that means is they're just paying for a treatment out of their own pockets. They're saying, yes, bring this client in for free. So I think we're seeing a lot of treatment centers really being invested in their clients. And despite insurance restrictions, they're still taking care of the patients and they're still caring about that person and their families. And that's the most important thing to me.
And that's wonderful. And hopefully we will have, treatment, though, you know, available, good treatment available, even if the insurance issues do change. I wanted to ask, let's ask Dr. Tom. Dr. Tom, what are you, I know you come from more of a holistic approach. So tell me about what you think, you know, as far as long-term treatment, or is if somebody can only have 30 days, is there other things they can do taking over from those 30 days when they get home, if the insurance only covers that? What holistic types of treatments, we touched upon that, would you recommend?
Well, obviously, the treatment with chiropractic helps resolve some of the pain without the addictive painkillers that they continue to get in some of the clinics. And the use of the auricular therapy also helps mute that pain, so they don't have that drive to have that, you know, that spark to have the pain covered up with more drugs. That was kind of disconcerting for me when I was working in an addiction clinic, and every time I was treating them, they were still getting more and more drugs. In some cases, they would get out of the pain fairly quick because they would, you know, continue with the chiropractic care and the auricular therapy and so on. But in many cases, they were more happy to stay in pain because then they got their drugs. Any drug to me is is still, anytime you can get them off more and more drugs and get them cleaner and cleaner, to me, that's much better. And even the new use of marijuana as a substitute for heroin, to me, you know, you can pull them off marijuana a lot easier than you can alcohol and heroin and all the other things. And in some ways, obviously, the marijuana is a little more safer than the synthetic stuff that nobody knows what's in it and nobody knows what it's going to do. And one of the problems with the synthetic marijuana, though, is that they keep changing the formula for it. So it's hard to keep it illegal when it has a different formula. It's not the same thing, so it's not illegal. So it's a cat and mouse game with the authorities that once they change one or two molecules on it, it becomes a different substance. And therefore, it's not illegal because that substance isn't illegal yet, because then they have to pass new laws to make that particular substance illegal. And so it makes it harder and harder to catch up with these guys. But there's a lot of synergistic effects when you combine the chiropractic and the auricular therapy for the patients to help get them off the pain. I had one patient that had fallen down some stairs about a month and a half before he came to me. And he was just in the clinic for about a week or two. And my first treatment for him, I did some auricular therapy for his face pain. And he felt weird after, he said. And the next morning when I spoke to him, he said all the facial pain that he had before was gone. Now, think how much less that he's going to want more drugs while he's in the clinic if you get rid of the pain that quick and you can get them without the desire for the pain because of the pain pills, because they don't have the pain anymore. But like I said, a lot of them were rejecting the chiropractic because they knew if they were getting better and they were getting care, that they would get less drugs, and they wanted to still continue with any type of drug that they could get.
Right, because of the addiction, right? Well yeah, and you bring up a really good point, which I want to ask Mark about this. Mark, this is interesting. Dr. Thomas spoke a little bit about the fact that marijuana is being used in to treat heroin. And what are your thoughts as far as being an attorney on the legalization of marijuana that is cut down on synthetic? I mean, it obviously would think that it would cut down on the synthetic marijuana because if it was made available, at least for medicinal purposes. So tell us your thoughts on that.
Well, so this is a good question. I have a brother and a brother-in-law who's a doctor, and my brother, who is now in his residency, was a holistic medical practitioner for 15 years. So I'm somewhat of a proponent with anything that is an alternative to what we're using now. And I know that Dr. Kaliestis has written about the use of marijuana to detox people. You know, I think as long as it's not going to be abused, I think it's a good idea. I mean, there's a lot of statistics and analysis that's been conducted on the benefit of medical marijuana, but I've also had people tell me in the treatment industry they believe it's a gateway drug. So, I mean, I think that if you're going to tell people in detox it's okay to smoke weed but not take, you know, Suboxone, then that might not work for me. On the other hand, if we're going to use an oil or something that cannot necessarily be abused or used to get a high, then I'm all for it, because I think that when you take one opioid and then replace it with another one, one being illegal, one being legal, I mean, I don't know if that necessarily solves the problem. So, I mean, if it can be used in a way that's not going to get abused and it can do good and get people off of, off of self-medicating for whatever reason it is, then I'm all for it. I really am.
That's a really good point that you bring up, Mark, about the fact that I think a lot of people are very uneducated as far as knowing that there are different versions of high CBD, very high concentrated CBD oil concentrate, and low THC does not produce a high or a euphoric feeling. It's a pain reliever. So that is not something that's going to get someone high, whereas a high THC is going to get people high. So I think people just categorize marijuana all as one, not that there's the CBD that's not going to get people high that could actually be used to relieve the pain and maybe steer them off of taking, you know, asking for OxyContin or something from their doctor when they're in terrible pain. So I think that needs to, you know, people need to be educated about that. I want to ask Harvey his opinion on this. I'm just going to mute you for a second. And let me, Harvey, what's your opinion on using, medical marijuana or CBD oil or marijuana in general for addiction treatment?
Well, I have a few comments to make on something what Dr. Thomas was saying. I'm all in favor of medical marijuana if it's used for dealing with specific ailments and pain. But basically, there are two types of addicts. One is someone who has real pain, and they take pain medication, and anyone who takes a narcotic will build a tolerance and become addicted. If you become an addict, you just need more of the drug based on the tolerance goes up. But that's not the problem today that we're facing. There's two types. There's maybe, I'm guessing at these numbers, 5% maybe of all people that are addicted because of pain versus the addicts that are addicted because of drug addiction and the lifestyle. There are some people that start out with pain and the pain goes away and they become addicted. Now they become a real addict and they're just like they started without the pain. So there's two types of things here. Now, I'm not that experienced with the medical marijuana part, but I do know that by reports, it helps help many people. There's another problem with the medical marijuana. It's getting into the hands of the addicts. We're not using it for medicinal purposes. They're using it to get high. And you said that some of it doesn't have the high quantities of THC, which would be also important. So we have a major, major, major epidemic in this country now, to the tune of maybe 15 million addicts using heroin. I'm not sure of the numbers, but it's a lot. And there's thousands of people dying a day throughout the country, every day. And it's not because of pain, it's because they are addicted to drugs. I got sober in 1978. And I started in the field of addiction in 88, 10 years later. And when I was working in a treatment model in Bethesda, Maryland, I remember there was lots of alcoholics coming into treatment. Today, you have the market is flooded. And like the young lady said, most of our addicts or patients or clients are 90% are primary heroin addiction. Today.
Wow.
Only a few are coming in with alcohol addiction because I don't know where they are, but they're not coming into my program.
That's absolutely
maybe they're coming
shocking.
Into you, but you don't get too many pure alcoholics. And I know there's 20 million of them out there, but I don't know why they're not coming into treatment, but they're not.
That's really shocking because I know, being in my late 40s, back in the 80s, I never had ever seen a heroin addict. It was all about cocaine back then, alcoholism, cocaine, marijuana. Yeah. And it's shocking, I guess, for people too. A lot of people in their 40s and 50s, you have teenage children. And you may be thinking like I think, well, heroin, gosh, nobody did heroin. That was like the bum on the street that did heroin. I mean, I never met anyone who did heroin back in my day. It was just not the drug of choice back then. So this is why parents, you have to open your eyes now. It is the drug of choice now. And chances are your child is being offered it. You have to assume that. And you have to educate them, especially with the fact that we've got this synthetic issue even being pulled into it where the Narcan, like we said before, is not, somebody's taking two doses to bring somebody back with Narcan because for those who don't know what Narcan is, Harvey can tell us quickly, it revives people from heroin overdoses,
yes.
But it doesn't work too well on the synthetic part of it if that's mixed in. And so this is a real danger that we're facing. And with, you said 90% of the people coming in with heroin, it's mind-boggling. Yeah, I want to ask Cliff a little bit about this too. Let me, Cliff, are you guys seeing the same thing with these high rates of primarily heroin coming through to your Just Believe Recovery Center?
Two things. I think I can add one thing to the discussion. We are seeing the majority of our clients admitting with heroin issues. The second thing is there's a really broad demographic switch. When we treat pure alcoholics, of which there are fewer, Harvey, you're right, but they don't come in to their late 40s and 50s. Alcohol as a disease takes longer. It's more socially acceptable. It's less destructive. Somebody can function as an alcoholic with a family and a job for a couple of decades before it really catches up. heroin as a street drug, it destroys you. You're lucky to get to your mid-20s. In my entire time here at Just Believe, I've seen two maintenance heroin users in their 50s. It's very rare. So the bulk of them are heroin, and the social acceptability of alcohol also makes it easier and easier to not go into treatment. 30, 40 years ago, the 12-step meetings were around, but it was not as socially acceptable to participate in them. Now there's a huge network. It's gone on for 60, 70 years. It's very socially acceptable to say, I'm working on this, I'm doing this, and heroin's still not socially acceptable. I think that's driving some of why there's more treatment here for that as well. And they also go homeless quicker. Obamacare changed one thing. They're on their parents' insurance till they're 26. I know you all are seeing the same thing. We have a lot of mid-20s people here getting in the last few treatment centers because they come in, they get healthy, they lower their resistance, they go back out. And some of them are in here, hey, I'm 25 and 9 months. I've got to get this time. I lose my insurance in 3 months. We see that as well.
It's a huge problem because, right, with everybody's being dictated by, right, the insurance for treatment because they don't know how they're going to get the money for that or the treatment. So we've had, to Addiction 911, I've gotten phone calls from people say, well, I don't have, the resources, the type of treatment center I'll go to is not going to be a nice one like you guys have in Florida. It's going to be a crappy one over, So it's very relative as far as that goes. So we're seeing this, and it's interesting how we brought up this issue of like alternatives like marijuana and stuff too to help, and that's another controversy as far as, you said 12-step programs worked, back for alcoholism, but heroin, I just read something interesting how an article described it, that a heroin user describes using heroin as like being in heaven. It's like the highest high you could ever have. And then the withdrawal is like being in hell. It's the most painful, most terrible feeling you could have. So when we talk about that, do we think that, are we saying non-medically treating heroin addiction? Is that a wise thing to do? Or should we be looking more towards Suboxone and medical marijuana and treating them more because of the fact that it's not the same as some other addictions?
Well, I can speak about what we're doing. Right now, we still are shying away from medication-assisted therapies or replacement therapies. We've tried methadone in this country for a number of years, and the heroin epidemic has gotten worse. What I can say is we're starting to use more and more is using Vivitrol, which there is no high whatsoever. It's injectable. It lasts 30 days. And the big thing that I see that's a benefit that I'm wanting to encourage more of our people is it cuts cravings down hugely. Heroin users have intense cravings, and part of that's simple science. When somebody's an injection user, the high is almost simultaneous with the act to get high. And the closer an action is paired with a reward, the more intense the link, the more intense the addiction. And so things like Vivitrol that lower cravings levels, that there's no way to get high off of, it's a once a month shot. That's something that we're using in our facility in Pennsylvania, and we're starting to use even more down here to give people anything we can to make them more successful.
Wonderful. Thank you, Cliff. I'm going to ask the same question to Harvey. Harvey, since you guys do treatment as well, are you using Vivitrol or is there any other things you're using to help people who are suffering through the withdrawal?
No, I agree with the gentleman who just shared. What's your first name?
Cliff. It's Cliff.
I think Vivitrol has a lot of positive attributes to it. It also has a lot of negatives. The positive is it keeps someone in treatment longer. They don't have cravings. They complete treatment. But sometimes it makes them feel normal, feel okay. And when they have to get off the Vivitrol sooner or later, and it can sometimes keep them from getting into recovery. And once they get back into the real world and they're off of the Vivitrol, I'm not sure if you can take Vivitrol for the rest of your life. It probably is like methadone or Suboxone. You take it for a while, but then after a while, you still want to get high, and you stop taking those maintenance drugs. I'm not in favor of that for long-term recovery. As a tool for short-term recovery, to help someone get into recovery, I think it can be very beneficial. but it has to be done by professionals who understand the recovery process and can transition someone into recovery in real life while they're using this maintenance type drug to help them with the cravings and the urges to get into recovery. And it takes a lot of professionalism and a lot of care. That's my thoughts on that. Vivitrol can be a very good aid, but it really is. But what I see, it keeps people from leaving treatment, keeps them in the program 2 months or whatever. Insurance companies like to see that, but I don't have the statistics, and maybe you do, Cliff, on long-term recovery, 6 months to a year after treatment, who were on Vivitrol. What's the recovery outcomes of that? That would be interesting to know.
Right, that would be. Well, thank you, Harvey.
Because I don't know. It's possible it could be a very good tool. But if 6 months the kids are still using again, then...
Right, then we have an issue. And exactly.
Well, can they take the Vivitrol for the rest of their lives? Can they get a shot?
Let me open Cliff up. Cliff, do you have any thoughts on that since he's asking you...
I do have a couple of answers. First off, I'm not a Vivitrol rep, and I want to preface, I agree with what you say. There is nothing that substitutes for a long-term, genuine connection with a recovery program. I have a little bit of a different philosophy. I'm not in recovery myself, so there's Celebrate Recovery, which is search-based. There's traditional 12-step-based programs. There's Smart Recovery, but if you're replacing, you're taking away a coping mechanism. You need to replace it with another equally powerful coping mechanism. Any tool we have, we talked about marijuana, we talked about Suboxone, some of those things have been successful, some have been mixed results. Anything you use has mixed results. Long-term studies do show that Vivitrol use does lower relapse rates. It's not a cure-all. I believe that the goal is 6 months to a year, year and a half at most. We did just have somebody come in and do a training for us, so I don't have the stats memorized. But it does improve chances. But I completely agree. If we're not plugging people into a real support community, there's been recent research that some of the addiction model they've theorized comes from a lack of social connections. The number of times I've sat across from somebody doing a bio and they say, yeah, I sit at home and use by myself and get high. They're lacking social connections to reconnect them to a healthy world of feedback, love, care, support. All of that is huge in maintaining long-term sobriety.
Absolutely. Thank you, Cliff. So I'm going to ask the next question. I just want to open this up to Dr. Tom, since this is also in your wheelhouse as far as your thoughts on the using something. You know, I know you were more holistic, so you were saying medical marijuana would be a good thing to use, but your thoughts on using something like Vivitrol or methadone or Suboxone.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear what you're saying. I'm getting a lot of distortion on my end.
Oh, okay. Your feedback. I was saying your thoughts on treating the heroin addiction with something like Suboxone or Vivitrol or like we were discussing. Can you not hear me? Okay, I'll put you on mute a sec. Let me throw the question over to lawyer Mark. Mark, what are your thoughts on this?
Listen, anything that's gonna help, I think is good. I guess I understand from the treatment point of view of, you know, using some type of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, drug to wean them off of the opioid. But I mean, you know, people say to me, what's the answer? There's no one answer to what we're dealing with here, right? I mean,
right. There's
lots of moving parts to this crisis. But what I do see is, you know, we have a medical profession that is trained to give out pills. You know, medical reps going around to the doctors pushing pills, and the insurance companies, they like to pay for pills, and then people get addicted to the pills, so we put them in treatment, and then the insurance company doesn't want to pay for enough treatment to get them off the pills, and then when we put them in detox, we give them another pill to replace the opioid that they're taking because they were on pills that were pushed to them by a doctor. So I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here, and I think that, you know, I mean, as a society, we're trained, you know, take two pills, call me in the morning. I mean,
right.
Our food's full of who knows what, right? Genetically modified. Our water is, you know, polluted. Our air is polluted. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here. I mean, I think that as a society, we have to start taking a much more holistic approach to how we take care of people overall, right? Our food needs to be natural. Our water needs to be clean. I mean, so there's a lot of things going on, and to start replacing an opioid with a leak, you know, a drug with a legal opioid, to me is insanity. But I think we have to do what we can for right now with getting people off of heroin and fentanyl and these other drugs that are killing them. Exactly. You know, you got to get them in a controlled environment. So I'm okay with that. But I think we have to take a much more holistic approach to what's really going on in our society.
Absolutely.
If we're going to deal with this, because otherwise we're just sort of, you know, we're just putting a Band-Aid on an underlying cause. And we have to start talking about the underlying causes and fixing them. You know, I mean, I remember hearing President Bush, you know, when he gave a joint, you know, address to Congress saying we're addicted to foreign oil. You know, I represented somebody who worked for he was an engineer for an oil company. And what he told me was, we could be off oil in 5 years. We could be off opioids, you know, drugs in 5 years too. So, I mean, you know, it's a societal issue here. And so, I mean, we're living in the bizarro world. We're treating drug addicts with legal drugs. I mean, it's insanity. And I think until we address the insanity of what's really going on, we're going to be dealing with this for a long time.
Well, thank you, Mark. So we have, you know, a lot of different opinions here. I'm going to start with Ruth because we're getting close to our time, and I'm going to have everybody give a last thought on our discussion today. And to tell, more importantly, I want you guys to tell the people out there, and if there's any questions, anybody has any questions, you can post it. I'm looking at the comments here. What I want you to do is let people know what exactly, you know, your specialty is at your treatment center or your services. You know, Mark's an attorney. Tell us what you do and how you can help them and how they can reach you. And I'm going to start with Ruth. So let me just unmute Ruth. Okay, Ruth, you're unmuted.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that you can reach out to us many different ways, but most of us are outreach coordinators. Our cell phones are the best ways. So my number is 772-486-9850, and we're on call 24/7, night and day. Our treatment center is also open 24/7, night and day, and detox. And we're always happy to answer questions from parents, to talk to clients. We're available all the time for a reason. We love what we do. We love the people that we work with. So I'm also going to turn it over to Cliff because he's our clinical director, and he has a really good idea of what our clinical approach is.
Okay, I'm going to move on. Before I do that, I just want to say for you and everyone, when you go back and watch the replay, post your phone numbers or the way you want to be contacted in the comments. This way people on the replay can watch, and it's easier for them to just, you know, see the phone number, see the email, see the website, and get that information. So I'm going to now unmute Cliff. And I'll mute. So Cliff, you want to pick up where Ruth left off?
Yes. Here at our treatment center, I mentioned already, have a variety of practices. We'd like to treat the entire person. One of the areas we do specialize in, we do a lot of special work with trauma. I myself, when I'm finished here, I'm going to do EMDR with people. We have an author wrote a book on forgiveness therapy, which is a really growing trend in this field. He's now authored a workbook. So we have a special trauma track that we do. And then we also, you know, cover the stuff that everybody else does. The big thing that I think makes what I like here is we constantly hire for passion. We hire for people who want to be here and are passionate about it. And you can't train that. You can't teach that. That's something you have.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Cliff. Harvey, would you like to tell us about Insight to Recovery and how we can reach you?
Well, for right now, the best way to reach me would be on my cell phone. And that's 561-441-5688. And you can look at our website, Insight to Recovery. I want to just make a comment on just a few things. What works best for most addicts, where there's a tremendous recovery rate, is a 12-step recovery, Celebrate Recovery, any of these programs where there are other alcoholics and addicts working a program of recovery with steps and camaraderie and home groups. That kind of treatment works best. The difficult thing that addicts have is after treatment, they feel good, and getting into those programs, not being a visitor around, but getting in and starting to get a sponsor and get a home group. So if that works best for most, and there's no, you ask any provider, anybody in this industry, and they'll tell you, yes, the ones that get connected usually stay sober. Whatever kind of a program it is. Now, if that's true and it is 100% true, well, I've developed a program that helps. We do all the EMDR and the holistic, the chiropractic. We have to take them equine therapy, everything. But the trauma track. But here's what we do, which is the most primary part of our program, because good clinical work, which most programs do, the ones that are serious and they're not about helping people. But we transition them while they're in treatment into the 12-step recovery and networks and sponsors from day one or two up until the 3 months that they're with us. So when they do leave us, they're already in recovery that they need to save their lives and to stay sober.
Great.
Yeah, and one other thing I just heard from my program director who's observing this. We also have the 12-step recovery curriculum in our clinical piece, which is probably the most powerful clinical tool ever designed for any human being to help them get in touch with their issues, feelings, early childhood, and work through the resentments and help them get connected and focused in a more healthy way in real life. So doing that with all the other stuff clinically and psychotherapy and everything really is important in this industry. In right. my opinion, there are not enough treatment programs that are doing what I just shared. And I would love to see that. One other thing real quickly, because I'm on a roll now. What I'm thinking is there is so much well, I just forgot what I was going to say. What can I tell you?
Well, let me tell you, we're running out of time, but thank you so much, Harvey. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm going to now go over to Dr. Tom. Can you hear me now? I just wanted to give you some time to be able to get through your closing statements and tell us where we can reach you and what you do. Can you hear me, Dr. Tom? I don't
think so. Yes, I'm a mobile chiropractor. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
I think I'm muted, okay. I am a mobile chiropractor. Okay. I'm a mobile chiropractor, and I cover the Tri-County area, and I do the auricular therapy and chiropractic and any other type of therapy, and I'm available to work in clinics that want to help their patients or clients with the chiropractic care and auricular therapy. And my number is 954-274-2722, my direct number. And my work number is 954-634-2730.
Oh, I lost it down here. We've lost you, Christina.
Sorry, I muted myself. I'm sorry. Okay. What I said was thank you. Last but not least, Mark, and thank you so much. I just wanted you to tell us about your services, what you do with the addiction field, and how you could help people, and where they can reach you, and your final thoughts.
Thank you. So, I mean, I work with families and individuals who are in crisis because of addiction, and that sometimes involves criminal cases, and I've handled cases all over the state. I tend to focus here on South Florida, but I have traveled and will travel to other parts of the state to handle a criminal matter. But I think the main focus of my practice is the Marchman Act, which is Florida's very special, very unique involuntary commitment statute that allows families, friends, spouses to ask the courts to intervene and force a loved one into treatment because they're not capable of making that rational decision for themselves. If they were, they would have done it already. So, I think it's a life-saving piece of legislation, and obviously I'm a fan, and I spend a lot of time talking about it. That being said, people can reach me. I'll give you my main number, and I always tell people, if I'm awake, I'll answer the phone. If I'm not, you'll get my voicemail. So they can call me 24/7, and I do take calls on the weekend because when people call me, it's sort of, you know, in case of emergency, break glass, right? They're calling me because they're in crisis. So I take those calls. They're important. So the number is 561-419-6095. It's 561-419-6095. And they can also go to my website, which is drugandalcoholattorneys.com, drugandalcoholattorneys.com. And they can send me an email through the website. It's info@drugandalcoholattorneys.com. And Christy, thank you very much for having me on, especially with all these really wonderful folks who are all fighting the good fight.
Well, thank you so much. And I just want to thank everybody today for being here and providing this insight. And again, make sure you post in the comments your phone numbers and contact information, because there's going to be many people who are going to be watching the replay of this. This replay is going to go out all across social media and on Facebook. So we want to make sure that everybody has a chance to ask you guys questions, to give you a call. And I want to say to the viewers, you know, if you're watching this, these are really caring people in the addiction field, and they are there for you. As you can see, they're giving out their personal numbers. They're telling you to call them. Take advantage of that. Parents, if you need to ask questions, you know, be proactive and find out more information. Contact these wonderful addiction professionals here, because they are dedicated and they're here for you. And our next show is going to be on June 29th. And we're going to tackle a very difficult conversation, which is going to be based more around families, loved ones, friends dealing with addicts. And tough love, and is that still effective, you know, with the new crop of drugs that are coming out? And we'll be, you know, of course, we hope that our panelists here will come back and join us on June 29th, because that's going to be, you know, it's a huge issue for families. It's one of the hardest issues you can deal with, is dealing with an addicted loved one. As you know, those of you who have family members who are addicted know, and how to help them. So I just want to thank, I'll just quickly, we'll have some feedback. I'm going to unmute everybody just so we can all say goodbye to each other. And we'll have this replay. And thank you guys so much. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to all of us.
Christina, what is the website that people go to post comments and where we can respond?
Well, this is actually on the Addiction 911 fan page. So if you go to on Facebook, you just type in Addiction 911, the fan page is going to come up. It's going to be running there. But I'm also going to be sharing it. It's going to be over on YouTube. It's going to be on LinkedIn. It's going to be everywhere. But the one you should post your comments will be this page, because I'm going to be sharing this particular video to the other groups, and it'll be all over social media. So definitely post on, go to the Addiction 911 page, make sure you give our page a like, and the video will be pinned to the top, and just, you know, go ahead and, actually I probably won't pin it because I'm mobile, it won't show up, but just, you'll see the show replay, and you can just write the comments underneath.
Thank you.
So thank you guys so much. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.